It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. This is Kurt Frankum. Today, I have a thought that I'd like to share with you, and this comes from an article I wrote, and I've talked about this concept many times, and it's an important part of delegation that people sometimes forget about. You know, there's so much talk and attention given to, you know, leaders need to delegate and they can't put it all on their plate. They have to, you know, leverage their counselors and auxiliary leaders and whomever it be and delegate. But that's not, you're not done once you delegate. There's another important concept that we need to take into account. And it makes me think about President Henry S. Truman. He had a small wooden sign on his desk that had a phrase on it that's become very popular. That phrase says, "The buck stops here." And obviously, I'm sure most people are familiar with that. If you're not familiar with it, what it means basically is all accountability rests with me as the leader, and nobody else should be blamed for any mistake, even though they may have been involved in that. And we many times skew this principle as leaders because we think, okay, I want to be the type of leader that says the buck stops here. But then we turn that into we become a micromanager, right? Because all the accountability is with me. So I better make sure that this project, this activity, this responsibility works out as I want it to work out. And so we hover, right? Over those that we delegate it to, we micromanage, we double check everything that's happening. We want to be present in every meeting, but that doesn't help anybody. Sure, you may make sure it gets done right, but that delegation is sort of canceled out because you really stepped in and took over, right? And so I want to share with you a clip. This is actually a YouTube video that you can watch on Leading LDS, where this recording is found. But many of you know Liz Wiseman, one of the great leadership thinkers of our time, and somebody I've had the pleasure to interview a few times on the Leading LDS podcast, and I encourage you to listen to those. Very informative. She's the author of Multipliers and Rookie Smarts, fantastic books. Anyways, good LDS member, and has been very kind to the Leading LDS world. But I just want to play real quick a clip where she describes this principle with a story, okay? And it's a story about her being at the beach with one of her sons.
I'm Liz Wiseman, the author of Multipliers. I'm here on Mavericks Beach in California, home to some of the best and the biggest waves on the West Coast. See, the waves here on Mavericks, they typically crest about 25 feet. Some get as high as 80 feet. Surfers from all over the world come to this spot in search of the perfect wave. So this seemed like a good spot to share an experience I had looking for that perfect wave. Not the way perhaps a surfer would, but looking for the right wave the way a teacher would. You see, several years ago, our family was on vacation. We had three small children, so we decided we'd go on a vacation to the beach. So we headed to Hawaii, to the island of Maui, and specifically to Kaanapali Beach. We plopped ourselves down right at the end of Kaanapali Beach at a place called Black Rock, which of course is named for the massive black volcanic rock that just jets up out of the ocean. It's beautiful, and the beach is beautiful. Because of the rock formation, though, the surf can be particularly rough there. Well, as every parent of small children knows, that an outing to the beach is a near-death experience, particularly when you've got a three-year-old boy who's fascinated with the ocean. And that day, his fascination drew him out further and further, and he'd toddle out beyond ankle-deep water and the knee-deep water where I told him it was safe for him to play. Now, he'd toddle out, and I'd go running after. I'd get him, scoop him up, bring him back to the beach, back to the sand, and to the shallow waves. Well, his curiosity would take him out. He'd venture out again. I'd scoop him up, bring him back. He'd venture out again. I'd scoop him and rescue him and bring him back. Try to, you know, explain to him the power of the ocean. I'd get down at eye level and look at him and tell him about the power of the ocean, how it was stronger than he was. Well, that went right by him, and he would toddle out again. Well, I decided that day that Christian was not likely to learn this lesson from Mom, but he just might be willing to learn this lesson from Mother Nature. So I went scouting for the perfect wave, the right size wave. Now, what kind of wave is that? I'm looking for a wave that's going to give him a good tumble and teach him about the ocean, but one that's not so massive that's going to sweep him out to sea. So as he's playing, I'm looking at the horizon. I see one that's too small. That one's too big. I go and grab him and pull him back, but I see my wave coming. I see the right size wave, and it's just kind of rolling in and getting bigger. And so I let him venture out, and I'm not quite as close. I stand to the side, maybe a step to the side, maybe two steps to the side. Now, I can notice that there's some parents on the beach who are concerned. One in particular shoots me that bad mother look. Now, I look at him and say, hey, don't worry. I've got this covered. You know, I'm on duty. Perhaps not on duty like a lifeguard, but as on duty as a teacher. Well, that wave came in. Indeed, it took Christian, turned him upside down, gave him a good tumble in the ocean. He tumbles once. He tumbles twice. And then maybe on the third tumble, I pull him back up. You know, he spits out the water, spits out the sand, looked quite surprised, shakes it off, and looks at me. And that's when I got down at eye level with him. And I asked him about the power of the ocean. You see, he understood because he had experienced it for himself. There are things that we need to learn by letting nature take its course. We learn from the natural consequences of our actions. In business, as managers and leaders, sometimes we need to learn just to stand to the side and let somebody else experiment, make a mistake, maybe fail. Let them experience the natural consequences of what they're doing so that they can learn and that they can grow. But the art of leadership is about picking the right size wave, one that might give them a tumble, not going to sweep them or you out to sea.
So how can we find the right size wave as a leader for those that we work with, right? Because there may be a secretary, an auxiliary leader, whomever it is that we can tell on the surface just does not have the experience or capability to really hit a home run on whatever it is we delegate to them, right? And so we cautiously hand over this assignment or activity or task and think, all right, you know, I'm supposed to delegate, so I'm doing the right thing, but man, this is just going to bomb, right? And so I better, you know, bless their heart. I don't want them to feel bad if it doesn't go well, so I'll sort of help them out, right? And so you metaphorically hold their hand through each step of planning and meeting, and you want to be present at each meeting and whatever it be. And sure, the activity works out, but that individual didn't get to be taught by the natural consequences of failure, right? Just like that perfect wave, you know, Liz waited for that perfect wave to teach her son a lesson. And that's an important concept. We can't just throw them in there to any responsibility. If the wave is too big for them and you know they're just going to be swept away, metaphorically speaking, and totally be devastated, then yeah, you shouldn't even delegate to that person in the first place, right? But you wait for the right wave, and then you step back and you wait. And you see this a lot of time with bishops, giving an auxiliary to a counselor, or maybe telling an auxiliary to do an activity, and they just can't stand it not working out as they should, or nobody coming, and so they step in and really overstep their boundary and take over, and that individual is definitely diminished. And so, I mean, for example, just are you willing to allow the bishopric counselor to try an idea, even though it's an idea for a really boring activity, right? What's the worst that can happen with a boring activity? People will say it's boring, right? Nobody's getting hurt or harmed or offended, but it's a boring activity. And then you allow that counselor to see, that didn't work as I thought. It seemed better on paper. Or are you willing to let the primary president select her own primary teachers and instructors, even though some might lead to a poor choice? You can just see a disaster waiting to happen. Are you willing to allow Brother Shy to speak in sacrament meeting, even though many will just fall asleep of boredom or he just won't perform well? But it will develop that individual beyond something that he was capable of before. Okay. So leaders should not be afraid to allow natural consequences to teach. As you delegate, let the natural consequences teach them. And by allowing those you lead to experience the discouraging consequences, it convinces them much deeper, and they learn on a deeper level than if you would have just, you know, verbally talked to them through that experience, right? Now, of course, if things go wrong, it's still up to you as the leader to step up and remind everybody, you know what, the buck still stops here, and I take responsibility for whatever happened, but aren't you glad that an individual learned through the process? So what are you willing to allow happen if it means that that individual will be taught at a deeper level? Think about that concept. I think it's really powerful and something I'm constantly reminding myself when I see something I've delegated kind of spin off the tracks and go downhill. I hesitate before I jump in to save the day, but I allow it to bomb if it has to bomb. And then it gives an opportunity to talk with that individual who was delegated to and say, you know, what did you learn? What did you see go wrong? What would have you done differently? And that builds a stronger leadership bond, and everybody's better off for it. So I appreciate you tuning into Leading LDS Podcast, and I'd love to hear your ideas. Go to Leading LDS, find this post and comment on it. What are some examples that you have experienced on both sides of this issue? I'd love to hear it. And as always, you know, I'm always seems to be pleading or peddling this or that, but I really want Leading LDS to grow and flourish. And so if you haven't checked out the Food Order Reference Guide, a Consequence Stick, please do so. It's blessed many wards, and I'd love for you to try it. And please give me your honest feedback as you gain these things. But either way, make sure you're on the Leading LDS newsletter. And until next time, be a leader and not a calling.